close the door.
All right. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order of the Smith County Public Library Board of Trustees and welcome everybody here this evening, even on the meet there, Kristen. Let's go ahead and look at the draft agenda. We have that.
So you want approval of the agenda to be adopted? I approve.
Okay, Tom makes a motion to approve the agenda. Do they have a second?
Second.
Nellie second. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, do we have anyone who would like to make any remarks during the public or guest remarks? Okay. Let's look at our minutes from the October meeting. They're in your packet, first thing. I think that this was emailed, Kristen. You should have a copy of that there in your email. You all just want to review that quickly. And we'll entertain a motion to approve if you don't have any changes.
Move to approve, no changes.
Okay. We have a motion to approve with no changes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nellie. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Do we have the October-November disbursement? Since we didn't meet last month, we will go over both months. You'll have that as well in your packets. You'll see income sources for November and October, and then you'll also see the disbursements journal as well.
So it's listed as check detail for October.
And there's also a profit and loss summary in here.
Right, that's the overall financial
okay.
report.
So, if you all look over the disbursements, let me find my October, there it is. There's Patton. Come on in, Patton.
How's everybody?
Patton, we're good. Patton's seat's right there.
We're spreading
today. We are. There's Kristen is online.
Oh.
She's quarantined. So she's...
Kristen.
We're looking at the disbursements right now. It's in your packet, three or four down. We have November and October to look at. I notice our elevator is been dispersed.
That was
the first little
November. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to pay.
Am I looking in here?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it's down underneath that third or fourth one down.
So we had to put down the down payment for that truck to come and vacuum out the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So that all happened on November 22nd.
Right.
And it was repaired.
Okay.
Almost exactly to the day 1 year after
one year.
First failed.
We have a working elevator. Any hiccups or is it running perfectly?
It's running quite well.
Good.
It's a thing of beauty and it's changed our lives.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
We're so happy to have it back.
That's good. I'm just kind of looking through here. I see that we've got a payment to Josh Witt for the...
Payments in there for Josh.
Mm-hmm. I see November. I'm looking at the November 4th.
Okay, so we pay him usually, I think, quarterly. Is that
mm-hmm.
right, Sheila? So his overall for the year is $16,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we pay him a chunk every quarter. But we also, because of the upgrade that we did to the Wi-Fi
mm-hmm.
in Chilhowee, particularly in Chilhowee, but we did those upgrades that were funded through the E-rate Category 2
mm-hmm.
money. So that was a separate project because
mm-hmm.
it involved, not our normal work. And
right.
so we paid him $800 for all of that work,
mm-hmm.
which is well worth the money
because
he helped us kind of evaluate the bids,
yeah.
order the equipment. He configured all the equipment when the
mm-hmm.
vendor sent it to us. So it was well worth $800.
Yeah, that is good. All right.
Our deductible claim was $1,000 on the elevator?
No, that $1,000 is from the legal fees for the lawyer in Roanoke that the Cincinnati Insurance Group from our liability insurance for the lawsuit. So we had a $1,000 deductible for that liability insurance policy.
Let's talk to our attorney about suing him for that.
Yeah.
I think somebody else is your attorney.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I just see that we've bought our books. The books seem to make up, you know, our big chunk of obviously what we spend, that and payroll. Is there anything else outside of our normal?
We had in October finally the Starnes invoice due to the air conditioning upstairs failed. Mm. And for some reason, I mean, work was done in August, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally billed us for it in October. So that's that $2,244 from the October bill, from the October checks.
Okay. I see that now.
Yeah, so that was a little unusual. That's not mm-hmm. something we hope to have regularly.
Right. Okay. All right.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes.
I love this format. I can understand this.
It's perfect. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. It has exactly what we know, what it is, when it was, and how much it was.
It does. It's not confusing at all.
Could be so difficult.
But we found out.
Well, the joys of QuickBooks.
Right. We have it all laid out.
It's awesome. It's just so easy to read.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheila, yeah, we've gotten better every month, you know, with our memos and putting the details in there. Because before, we only ever used to give you the date,
right,
the name, and the amount. We'd mm-hmm. tell you what it was
time
for.
At some expenses or something, and she said they're on pages like 3, 7, 11, and 13.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so much better.
Yes. So,
it is.
So Sheila pulls this together in QuickBooks and then, you know, downloads it to us in Excel mm-hmm. spreadsheet. And so
it makes it easier to follow.
Yep.
So if everybody's had a chance to review the disbursements, we'll entertain a motion to approve if there are no other questions.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Thank you all.
Is that for both months?
Yes, that was for October and November, right, Patton? That was your motion
yes.
for both?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on now to review the financial reports for October and November. So this is just reviewed. We don't need to vote on this.
The one thing we wanted to point out is in the October version, which I see we don't have months on it, so it's a little hard for you to tell which mm-hmm. is which. But so we're showing you, you know, we've got the 3 months, and
yeah.
the one to the right is the month. So you can tell it's October because that's the last column.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can only show you kind of, there's not only enough room to give you 4 months at a time. And so as we go through the year, we just drop a
shift
month off
them.
Every
mm-hmm.
time. So you'll see the most recent four mm-hmm. months.
Right.
If that makes sense to you all.
Right. And we just look down through here, and mainly the thing that should catch our eye is any column where we have a negative.
Right. We have a couple.
Mm-hmm.
We're
looking at these profit and loss budget versus actual. It goes together kind of like this. It's two different sets.
Okay.
There are two.
There are two, October and November.
And you'll see it fits together kind of like a...
So the first column is just what we originally budgeted, and then mm-hmm. the last column to the right is what's left for each
okay.
account. So, I think this is exactly what you
this
all were looking for.
It is.
Wow.
But
we can tell when we're running into trouble on that far
someone
right.
Someone turn the light on.
It is.
This is so easy. Wow, thank you.
Okay.
Yes, it's taken us a while to get QuickBooks up and running, but Sheila has done an amazing job.
Yeah, that's great.
Of mastering it.
It looks like we're doing well with all of our expenditures here.
Yeah, we're okay. Like I said, there are a couple places, like I didn't budget for bank charges, and there have been some, so they want to charge us sometimes for, and this particular one I think was for the Chilhowee BB&T when we took the money out to pay for the scholarship, because it's set up as a CD, and so we needed to get the money to pay the scholarship, but they had already rolled it over, so we had to pay a $25 fee to get our money out of CD. When that CD matures, we're going to move it to the Bank of Marion, just because it's not very convenient to have it over in Chilhowee, because I have to physically go there every time we have to do something with it. So we're going to move it to the Bank of Marion when it matures.
Okay. The only thing I notice is this one that shows there is a deficit for the Marion Children's Area local supplies. So are they going to have any money for the rest of the year for supplies, or have we moved some money around for that?
We will. Mm-hmm. I think we already did, actually.
Mm-hmm. We took it out of the local money.
You took it just out of the local?
We zeroed out the state, and I apologize, that should have been on yours. I must have sent the wrong copy.
No, you're fine. I've just got...
We took it out of state.
Mm-hmm.
Put it out of local and put it in there, so we
want to
use local money from now, but we use all
of
it.
Okay, so it's just out of there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The November one shows that it's zero instead of negative.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody have any questions about the financial reports other than that?
So while we're on financial reports, should we talk about the audit report?
Yeah, that would be a perfect spot to talk about the audit.
So you all have a copy of the audit report as well as the letters from Robinson Farmer and Cox and Associates. And so our audit this year is pretty much the same as last year. We have the same finding
under this, right?
So in the audit, it's a clean audit. The only finding is the same one that they gave us last year about our pension liability.
Mm-hmm.
That if we were to close today, and we had to pay everybody their pension, we would be, we wouldn't have sufficient funds to do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is evidently very common, and it's nothing we have control over because we participate in VRS. And so VRS tells us what to contribute, and VRS, adjusts every 2 years. They adjust the percentage. I talked to Sean about this when I sent the audit over to Sean, and Sean says they have exactly the same finding, only theirs is significantly worse than ours. Theirs is millions,
right,
as opposed to ours.
Mm-hmm.
And ours is a little better than it was last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Other than that, they also give us one of the letters from them. So one letter is just about the audit, and then the other letter is kind of their recommendations to us about internal controls. So the first thing I would tell you is these are not the same things as as last year, with the exception of bank deposits. And so we have, we will or have already addressed several of the things that are in that letter.
Mm-hmm.
So bank deposits, cash money is not our primary source of funds. Mm-hmm. And so in the audit world, they have, they started with the standard that you have to deposit every day. Well, I don't have time for Sheila to spend doing bank deposits every day for amounts of money that are, $50 or, sometimes as much as $300.
Mm-hmm.
So we only do it once a week, and we've told her that, and she agreed, as long as we have a regular schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then she and Sheila are working on how to keep track of when we balance our cash every day, and so when they have money they need to deposit, they send it to Sheila, and so she holds it and then makes her weekly deposit.
Mm-hmm.
So Emily just wants us to figure out a way to document what's waiting to be deposited, mm-hmm. which Helen and Sheila have figured out. So okay. I think we've already satisfied that suggestion. The other thing she was concerned about was that Sheila was a signer on the bank account, and so we changed that. Mm-hmm. We took Sheila off as a signer on the bank account. So now it's Helen, Tracy, me, and you.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. I noticed one thing on here, the statement of economic interest for the board. This
yes.
is for the board. Make sure we fill out those statements of economic interest every year and that they're complete. And when are those due, just to remind us all?
Those are due in January.
So that is coming right up. Make sure we complete those. And, yeah.
What would be helpful for you all? So should I send them to you, like, the first week of January?
I think
to say,
just make sure you do this, fill it out, and we return it to the county.
Not to me, to Sean.
The county.
They all go to Sean.
Yeah.
But it's helpful to me to have a copy so when the auditor comes,
mm-hmm.
I can show her.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, everybody last year, you know, gave me a copy so I was able to say, yes,
right.
here are the copies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful. But... Mm-hmm. Sean Utt is the important person.
Yeah, we need to make sure he gets this.
When Sean gets them, then we have met our goal.
Okay. Okay. So January, first week, we need to start working on those.
Okay.
So are those like the forms we turn
mm-hmm.
in every year? Like,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's that same.
Go to the auditor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they go to Sean. So to
mm-hmm.
meet the county's requirement,
mm-hmm.
we have to send them to Sean because
okay.
he's the clerk of the county. I think last year we had confusion, and some of them went to John, who I then had to call his office.
Sean's
say,
actually the county administrator.
Right, but he's also,
is he also the
clerk
county for
clerk.
The county, for the board of supervisors?
Yeah, he's also, yeah, I discovered this. Yes, it is very confusing, and so I discovered this as we were trying to get it all done,
mm-hmm.
because some went to John, and then I had to call John's office and say, please send them to Sean, and
right.
they were very sweet, and they did it, and so it all worked out, but yes, we do have to do those in January, so I will send everybody a reminder the first week in January.
Okay. Margaret, can you move back to the audit for a moment?
Right.
Sure.
On page 2 and on page 49. A pet peeve that I have that auditors do, they sign Robinson Farmer Cox Associates. So, Rose, if you're sending the letter out, you don't sign Smith County Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
You sign Rose Likens and then directors of the library. So I want to know who did this and who I would call if I have a question. I want a human's name right here.
Okay.
And they can do, you know, partner or whatever they want, but we need a human name there on page 49.
Okay. So I will tell you that the name of the person is Emily Byers.
Well, then Emily can put the name
right.
And
historically speaking, these people they've rid themselves of any liability on anything they say. They say, you know, the only thing we did was what you gave us, and you're responsible for everything else. And that's my pet peeve. I don't even know why we go through it.
Right,
I remember
them saying that.
Yeah.
But I ask this every time we have an audit, if they put their name.
I remember you asked that specifically.
They never do.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine if I just signed a letter, Graham?
Well, can you imagine that you pay them to do all this and they say, you know, we're only as good as what you sent us, so this is worth nothing other than the paper it's written on.
Mm-hmm.
Except that we have to have it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've complied with our requirements, so we're required to send it to the county, which we did as soon as we got it, and we're required to send it to the Library of Virginia, which we did. So we have met all of our and you know, obviously give you all your own copies.
But I really, really don't like them doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing of you just signing the letters in the county library.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody does the work.
Yeah.
Right. There is a human in that office.
Right.
I'm assuming.
Yes.
You've seen her, right,
yes.
Emily?
We've met Emily. And I will say she's quite lovely, and she's
uh-huh.
been quite helpful to us.
Well, she can put that quite lovely name on you.
Tell her to put a little smiley face on it.
Oh, goodness. All
now,
right.
Last year, she met with you all virtually
she did.
To go over the audit report. Do you feel like you want to do
it's
that again?
No, we don't need it. But it's on this letter, too.
It is. That's on both. I think we're good to not have her meet with us unless you all have any specific questions. I think this is
going to cost us more money.
Yeah, I think we're good. Last year, we really needed it. We really needed it. This year, really.
Yeah, we weren't sure where we were.
I just glanced down, which brought a thought up. How old is the van? It's talking about capital assets. The van is
2013, I believe.
Okay, so it's not.
It's not ancient.
No, okay. I just, there's something, you know, as we move forward, start a fund.
Well,
at some point.
And that was one of the things also that we need to keep our, you know, capital assets.
Right.
So we have been working on an inventory. We did a much more comprehensive inventory to include, you know, the
little
tables,
things,
the chairs, the furniture, and they don't care about that.
Right.
They just want those big expensive bits. And so that's much easier, right? So we have been doing a real no kidding nuts to bolts audit, but they only care about the big ticket
items,
so we can easily give them that.
Okay.
And we did share our overall inventory with them.
Mm-hmm.
They were not interested.
No,
like,
well, that
we don't care about that. We only care about your depreciable capital assets.
Okay.
And so they've given us a form, and we will fill out that form, and we'll be fine.
Okay.
So, Brendan and Sheila, I do have a question. Tom brought this up. When Emily comes here, does she just get to look through everything we have, like unfettered discretion?
Well, they give us, this year it was a lengthy process because they did a pre-audit visit, which came in April or May, I forget which.
I think it was May.
And so they came, and before they came in May, they sent us a list of things they wanted that we uploaded to their system. And then they came in May and had a look around and said, well, we want to pull some of this, we want to pull some of that. And then when they come for the final field visit, they came and they were here the whole day. And they set up down here, there were three of them, and they kind of worked with Sheila and Helen, and they would just kind of come out and say, we would like to see these credit card bills. And so then Sheila would go dig around and find the credit card bill and give it to them. One of the things she wants us to do a better job of is documenting approval for every purchase. So because the credit card, you know, has full documentation, we haven't done like a written approval to go with that, but she wants us to do that. So we've started doing that. We made up our own little purchase approval form, and we are now using that. So when Helen does all of our ordering, and whenever she goes to make an order, she brings me now the paper, and I sign the paper so that the auditor will have it in the file to see, even though we purchased it by credit card, it was approved in advance the way it's supposed to be.
So if that's the case, if they come here and they have unfettered discretion to our records, I really don't think that disclaimer is appropriate. That this is based on what you gave us.
Well, I mean, they don't go digging in the file, so I don't want to give
them the opportunity to.
Yes, they tell us what they want to see, and we give it to them.
Well, they're here, in my opinion, they're here to make sure we're not doing anything wrong. Okay, if they come and we give them the information that we give them, and they say, well, everything looks good, we're declaiming it because, you know, everything looks good, but you gave us the information. So what? I mean, you're supposed to be looking here because we're giving you the information, and we're hiding this over here. Helen's hiding the fact she's buying a chocolate every other month.
Helen.
For shame.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
I thought it would be coffee.
Can you imagine if I gave people advice and put a disclaimer on it? Like, what's it worth then?
Mm-hmm.
Bingo.
Right. What do you think?
Well,
a nonprofit to have an audit.
To comply with the regulation somewhere, and it doesn't even matter.
Right.
What's a good thing we can throw money to?
Right.
Well,
I
will also say, I mean, she's genuinely helpful, right? I mean, compared to my government experience where when the inspectors come, they're looking for the gotcha. They want to hang you out to dry. They want to find that thing where they can say, oh, look, you're wrong. And she's much more helpful than that. So, like, when Sheila was setting different processes and procedures up, you know, we email her and say, hey, Emily, this is what we think we're going to do. Will that meet your audit requirement? And she tells us, yes, that'll work. No, I need a little more, a little less. So she's that. It's been a much more collegial kind of teaching process than that has been my experience. And I think, Sheila, that's also your experience, right?
And I'm not just saying that about this company. They all do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this is standard audit. And to your point, there's a whole lot of difference between a government auditor and a private auditor.
Right.
You're paying a private auditor. They can't afford to piss you off. I mean, you know, the government auditor, taxpayers paying that, you know, we got to find something to justify our job,
you know. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's pretty much the review then on the audit. I didn't notice anything else really substantial.
It's a clean audit. Yeah, and yes. You did a good job, and mm-hmm. I appreciate it, just because I'm ranting about.
It's okay. Yeah. No, I mean, and Helen and Sheila did.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to get those audits done every year. And so, thank you.
Well, and it's just random records, isn't it? I mean, you don't know what they're going to ask for.
Right, and Sheila wasn't here for the front part. She was only here since March.
Congratulations.
So Sheila only got here in March, and so they were asking for stuff that Sheila had never seen.
Right.
And so between Helen and Sheila, they were digging around trying to find all this stuff.
Well, congratulations on making it through another audit. That's pretty much what we need to
say.
So
I think from now on, we're good. From now That's on, good. All future audits, we've all been here. We know where we've put things and how we've done things.
That's great.
And it's coming from one source.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great.
So I think for the future, it'll be even better.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for the report
on
the audit. We're going to move on now to the director's report.
Okay. So, well, I just want to, as I said, always say every month, I told you a lot in writing, so I don't want to repeat any of mm-hmm. you know, but I want to hit the highlights. So obviously, the elevator being repaired has been huge, and so we're very happy and very grateful. And very grateful to the Board of Supervisors and to all of you who called your Board of Supervisors members to get them to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. I should also say that I sent you the notice that Heather Colley had resigned from the board. We do now have a new Board of Trustees member. Her name is Tracy Prater, and she was approved by the board on Tuesday evening. She is from Saltville. She is a retired, she taught at Rich Valley Elementary School and then was recruited by Anne Arundel County Public Schools up in Maryland in the Annapolis area and retired from there. She was a principal in that system and has come back to Saltville. So she has a lot of library experience, and a lot of library interest. So unfortunately she, you know, was just appointed Tuesday, so she had a conflict for tonight. So she plans to join us at our January meeting.
That's great. We're happy to have her.
So we have a lot of staff movement. We're in the middle of a lot of staff mm-hmm. movement. We hired two additional part-time people, Sarah Robinson and Alicia Satterfield. Sarah is primarily working in Chilhowie, although she lives in Marion. And Alicia Satterfield is primarily working in Marion, although she lives in Chilhowie.
Oh, so. Well. That works.
This is good cross-fertilization.
It is.
We, sadly, will be losing Rita at the end of this month. It will be very hard for us to lose that fount of knowledge and background. I promise that she'll let her rest for a little bit before we rope her back into library projects. Mm-hmm. I know she wants to continue to be involved with the Sherwood Anderson collection, mm-hmm. of course. And so, as I said to you in the notes, I've reorganized our departments. And so Tracy is now head of Youth Services and Outreach. Since a lot of youth services is in fact outreach, mm-hmm. So Hannah will go full time. Hannah Combs, who has been Tracy's assistant, and she will be primarily responsible for outreach. And so she's been training all month with Rita, and she's gone out and met all of our outreach partners. And so Tracy will be supervising and guiding her. But Hannah will do the deliveries. Hannah will choose the books that go to our partners. And so I think it's going to be a great opportunity to have somebody with a new perspective and a young perspective. Hannah has terrific empathy for all of our patrons. I think it'll be a terrific opportunity. But obviously, it's going to hurt to lose Rita. And I know she will be around to answer questions and help Hannah be successful. And then Elaine Ollinger, who works up in circulation, who's our other full-time person in circulation, is retiring as of January 14th. So that is also going to be another big loss for us. Elaine is willing to come back. She has to not work for a month after she retires, but she is willing to come back as a part-timer if we need her to do that. So we have advertised that job. It closed yesterday, and so we have a hiring committee that will be evaluating the candidates, and we hope to have someone on board so that there's a little overlap with Elaine so we can get some knowledge transfer going there. But yes, retirements are... I'm happy for folks who are retiring, but I'm also sad for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 10 applications, Helen?
Give or take a few. Well, I mean, more give than
mm-hmm.
take. So we've gotten a few.
Okay.
We have, with our free COVID tests, we have distributed 83 so far. Compared to other library systems, I would say the small and rural libraries have been slower than the big urban libraries. So Alexandria and Fairfax kind of described the experience of running out of tests within an hour of opening their branches. And we have not had that kind of a run.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing about 25 a week, more or less. This week we've already hit 25. We'll keep going. I think it's a combination of it's hard to penetrate the entire community to let people know that they're available, but there have been other testing options available in the county.
Mm-hmm.
So people who have called us have been, you know, really grateful that we've had them. I mean, Tracy had a heartbreaking call one morning of a lady who had lost her son that morning to COVID, and she was calling because the rest of the family needed to get tests. And so, it's just heartbreaking. So I'm so happy that the Virginia Department of Health gave us those tests and we've been able to help people.
Mm.
I think we will probably see in the run-up to Christmas, you know, a little more demand than, you know, as people are getting ready to travel or to see family. I think we'll see some increase. The other thing I wanted to mention is the website redesign. We have embarked on that project with our contractor. We had our first meeting, and he's got a rough outline of what the homepage is going to look like. So we hope to have it all done by mid-February. So we hope to have that complete. So that'll be a wonderful thing. We have, on the collection side, eliminated the music CD collection completely. They've been deaccessed from our system. Here are the cabinets they used to be in. And that's largely because they don't circulate. You know, it's an obsolete form at this point.
What did you do with them?
So typically when we deaccess stuff, we give it to the friends to sell in the book sale. It is our standard. We have only one or two patrons who regularly come in to borrow CDs, and they don't come all that regularly. And so it's, again, one of those things that weighs on our turnover rate because we're holding all of those things in our catalog, but they're not circulating. So it makes our turnover rate lower than it should be. So we've gotten rid of those. We have not added new things to that collection for a while, and once the collection becomes stale, then there's no reason for people to come back, because they know there's nothing new in there.
So. Does that come under your weeding type of thing?
Yeah, it's weeding, but it's also figuring out what people actually use. So we look at the circulation numbers to see what do people actually use.
Okay.
And those, as I say, you know, just don't circulate. That's kind of how we start weeding, is we look, you know, when we're looking at books, anything that hasn't circulated at least once in 5 years goes on the list of things to be weeded.
Oh, okay.
If somebody hasn't looked at that book in 5 years, they're probably not going to.
We probably don't need it.
When they pull all of those books off the shelf, Helen prints out a list, they go and pull them, and then I look at the cart, and if I see, like, there are some classics, you know, there are things that are called a core collection that are prize winners. The last carts I looked, there was some Tolstoy that had come off. Well, I put it back and said, no, we're going to keep Tolstoy, because if a high school student was coming looking for a classic, or anybody who wanted to read a classic, we would want to have it. So stuff like that. Somebody else. There have been several where they've just been prize winners. And I also look at either regional voices, things that are applicable to the South. I don't want to lose those from our collections because I think they resonate, so I keep those. Mm-hmm. And I look sometimes for diverse voices, again, just so that we keep the collection as diverse as it can be.
Just wondered.
Sure, no, absolutely. And then finally, Christmas stuff. We're having a staff potluck Christmas breakfast tomorrow, where everybody's bringing stuff, and we had lunch. The Friends provided lunch for the Marion staff last week, and everyone got a ham for Christmas, so that was very much appreciated. So the Friends,
wow,
taking good care of the library staff. So, do y'all have any questions about anything else in the reports?
I noticed the van was
hit. Yes, sadly.
That poor van.
Yeah, so Byron had parked out front to unload. Uh-huh. We'd done the deliveries, right. And he parked out front on the street while he was uh-huh. bringing stuff in, and so he wasn't with the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And but then when Rita went to drive it the next morning, she saw that it had been, that there was something. So we're trying to get estimates. It's actually proving to be a little difficult to get estimates to repair it.
Mm-hmm.
So we only have one estimate so far. Byron has been to like 4 or 5 body shops, and people are saying things like, I'm 4 months behind.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not giving estimates right now because I'm backed up 4 months. Mm-hmm. And he went up to the dealership, and they said, oh, yeah, we don't have a body shop anymore. And so we're having a hard time. He was going to go to someplace in St. Clair, his body shop in St. Clair, I think, that he was going to try to see if he could get an estimate there. So, you know, we're not required. The first estimate we got is something like $660. So county procurement policy says you only have to get a lot of the 3 estimates of things over $1,000.
Right.
So, you know, if we can only get 2 estimates, I mean, I have a list of the people we tried to get estimates
right.
from. I think we should just go ahead and get it fixed and not play.
Just get it done.
Yeah.
So. I had to have a new bumper, and I think I waited 6 months.
Wow.
I don't know what this is going to involve, but it is that front piece that got straight,
which
is why we think that it was somebody backing
out,
because that's the bit that got straight.
And they didn't stop, right?
No.
Oh, no. We did not hear from whoever did that.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so let's move into your old business then for the grant implementation progress report.
Yes, so our grants are booming away. We have received, so there are 2 grants, so I'll go in order. You should have a piece of paper. This is basic grant information.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go in order of those. So I've already told you the projects for the ARPA grant are the website. So I already told you that we've embarked on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Wi-Fi internet, I've recruited the Rich Valley Presbyterian Church in Saltville, which is really not in Saltville, it's in Rich Valley, but they've also agreed to host our internet router. Frankly, the holdup right now is our contractor, the people who have to come out and do the site survey, who are going to do the installation. It's just been really hard for them to get a Verizon. I guess they have to go, and the Verizon tech has to also go to do whatever they're doing, and they've had a hard time getting the Verizon tech to meet mm-hmm. them to do this work. So we are continuing to figure out how to schedule that. So once we do that, it should be pretty fast. They have to do the site survey, then they'll buy the routers and come back and install them, and we'll be in business for that project. Then for the other one, the Emergency Connectivity Fund, the Wi-Fi hotspots have arrived. They are in the building. We've gotten the system set up with Verizon. We need to do some training with them about how to use their console. We have the tablets. Mm. So the tablets have arrived. These are the tablets that we will be circulating, and I'll pass these around, but this is what it will look like. So it has this little ruggedized case. Mm. And so it's a Samsung Galaxy tablet that's just in a sturdy case, so hopefully it doesn't get broken. It has a little handle. And we'll be putting them in the bags just to keep the charger with it. And Janet has always been very creative in, you know, kind of labeling everything, mm-hmm. labeling all the pieces so people know what.
So can you check that out?
Yes, we have 25 of these.
Get out my library card.
So the requirement for
the
requirement in legislation for this program is that it has to be for folks who don't currently have internet. So we're trying to reach people who haven't had internet. Mm-hmm. So we have 25 of those.
Well, I can drive somewhere in Rich Valley and not have internet.
So we'll have 25 of those, mm-hmm. and then we have 50 of the Wi-Fi hotspots. Mm-hmm. And so now it's just a matter, and I had hoped that maybe we could get these going before Christmas, and I'm starting to see the reality handwriting on the wall is that mm-hmm. it's probably going to have to be in January. I would love to get them. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about, you know, kids being home over Christmas right. break. It would be great to get them in the hands of people, but I just think we're going to run out of days right. before that. And so I think it's probably, unfortunately, going to be January. I've got a press release ready to go out to mm-hmm. announce it. And, you know, Stephanie has promised she'll give us good coverage in the paper. And Henry Thomas at the radio station said he'd be happy for me to go back and talk to him about these. So we'll try to get the word out.
Is there some policy about bringing back everything but the plug-in or bringing back?
Yes, they have, in the policy, we have a procedure, right, for how the whole program works. And so, yes, if they lose the charger, then they have to pay to replace the charger. The same with the hotspots. If they, you know, they come in we bought cases for them. So if it comes back without the case, then they have to pay for the case if it comes back without
the
charger.
So you can check out a hotspot thing, too?
Yes. That's part
check
of that
grant. Check out the hotspot and...
Oh, no, these tablets.
The tablets have a hot spot.
It's built in.
We are cooking with gas now.
The tablets have a hot spot in them, so in addition to having
like
the tablet...
And it was all grant-funded. We didn't have to... I mean, grant.
Wow.
Yeah.
We had to pay for the cases.
I'm really impressed with that.
Me too.
We had to pay for the cases because the cases weren't covered by the grant.
I like the background.
But you want to protect you want to protect it, so you, I mean.
Yeah, so the cases for the
hot spot
we had to pay for.
But the cases are nothing compared to the hardware. Well,
they were a little pricey, but you get 50 of them. Yeah, they were a little pricey, but
I mean, the total amount that we received in grant funding was, this $23,787 for the one for emergency connectivity.
And then
another $21,792 for the ARPA subgrant. So that's a lot of money that's going to help benefit our communities.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Money that was just there.
In my opinion, that's the type of thing you ought to pop in front of the town council in Chihuahua and pop in front of the town council here and
supervisors
and say, look what we did. Look at us.
Mm-hmm. In November, when I went to Marion and to mm-hmm. the Board of Supervisors, I did talk about both of the grants, and I talked mm-hmm. about the COVID test kits.
Mm-hmm. I think that's real good, but I think it's not as good as, look at this.
Yes.
Holding it up.
Is the paper they might put something in here about this?
She's already written about it once.
Okay.
Stephanie's already written about it once, and she's going to write about it again when we're ready to start handing them out. But yes.
I just think this is incredible because there's so many people that don't have access.
Right. So is there an age limit? Can a student check out?
If they have a library card with their parent, you know, if they have a, parents have to sign for kids' library cards. So, yes.
So they,
but they there can are, do there's parental controls.
Right. So, and all of the data plans are, do have filtering. Verizon filters the data plans, and that's a requirement because it's federal money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so we will tell people, you know, when they come, they'll have to kind of set up an appointment to come in. This is not something they can just go to the shelf and take. They've got to sign the agreement to acknowledge that they're going to have to pay for anything they don't return.
Mm-hmm.
That when they turn, if you know, and we're going to loan these for a month, and we're going to loan the hotspots for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole point of this is to help people change their lives, to apply for a job, to take a course, to learn something that will help them improve their lives. So that's why they're going to have extended loan periods. But you know, these control suites that we have will enable us to turn them off remotely. So if they don't bring them back, they have a 24-hour grace period, and then we're cutting them off from here.
Right.
And you cut off.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah.
I can see that happening.
Yep. Yeah, because people don't want to give them back. And so and they'll sign a statement that says, I acknowledge that, you know, this
That's
will be cut
great.
Off if we don't. It's not returned on time.
So have you spoken with Dr. Carter and the school system to let them know that we have this? Because I know sometimes teachers in that front line, they can identify students in their classrooms that really struggle because they don't have internet.
Yes.
So if you had this kind of partnership to say, if you all help us identify who these kids are,
mm-hmm.
and get them into the hands of those students somehow.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, we've had a really great initiative from Sharon Dishner at the Chilhowie High School Library. She has some students whose parents are unable to get to the library to fill out the application and get a library card. So she asked if we would consider kind of issuing them a card just to use our electronic materials,
mm-hmm.
to download books and use the databases. I said, absolutely. If you will certify to me that they're students in the system, I have no problem giving an electronic card. So we're going to do it as a pilot for Chilhowie and see how it goes. So I wrote a letter, you know, that if children who are interested to, you know, to parents saying, here's what we're offering. Obviously, it is still parents' choice, and, you know, the parent still has to sign the card to say, I agree my child can have this card. And then they'll take them back to her, and then she'll get them to us, and we'll mail the card to the family at home.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we making it electronic exclusively? Why don't we say, yeah, we'll let you have a card?
Because the returning materials is where parents get unhappy with us, right? If they don't have a vehicle to get to the library or transportation to get to the library to check out a book, the chances are that it'll become an issue in terms of returning stuff. And so they asked for electronic only. And so, you know, we're kind of giving them what they asked for. Yeah, I did think about just making it, okay, we'll just give you a regular library card, but that the fee, the fines, you know, parents get pretty cranky about that is our experience. Helen, am I interpreting that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then if the book gets lost, then...
They're on the hook to
the,
pay for it.
Yeah.
So they run zero chance of a fine with electronic materials, right?
So mm-hmm. if they just keep it forever, there's no fine?
Well, they're returned automatically. Your loan period for electronic materials is usually 21 days. And at the 21 days, the, you know, Overdrive or Hoopla pulls it back. So it can't be late.
I'm sorry. I don't... So we hand them this tablet, and we say, here, use it for 21 days and bring it back.
No, they're talking about... using their own devices. The card gives them access to our databases. So Newsbank,
okay, I see.
You're Hoopla,
talking about software, not
Libby,
not the,
yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All the stuff on Find It Virginia. So Find It Virginia has a ton of stuff, but you have to have a public library card to get access to
okay.
it.
Okay.
So that's what she's...
I'm sorry.
That's what this librarian is trying to get them mm-hmm. access to.
Yeah, to teach them how to use those resources. Okay, so is that all on the grant implementation, pretty much, or
yeah.
okay?
Awesome.
So now our big business is the consideration of the new personnel policy, which is before you in this handbook. And a lot of work has gone into the handbook.
Yes. So we have, as you know, we have an HR consulting firm. They're called HR Resolutions. And they've been working with us now for several months. And this is, you know, they've worked very hard on this. And I did some more work, and the personnel committee met and talked about it. I did a little research based on that conversation. So it's been vetted. I shared it with the employees in November. There is a summary sheet that says summary of changes to SCPL personnel policy. That's just a bulleted list that so you can see what's different. I will say that there are a couple things that I would draw your attention to. A lot of these changes are to bring us up to date with legal requirements. There are some other things that I'm doing for financial reasons. So one of the things that we have currently in our policies is we allow people to accumulate sick leave up to 1,200 hours. And when they leave us after 10 years, we will pay them a third of those hours. So that's another one of those financial liabilities that they talked about in the audit report.
Mm-hmm.
1,200 hours is a lot to allow people to accumulate for sick leave. And so in this policy, I'm cutting that back to 600 hours, mm-hmm. which still gives people several months. We won't take away anybody who has currently more than 600 hours. We'll let them keep whatever hours they have and draw them down until they hit 600. They won't accumulate any more until they get under that 600 threshold.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that in our existing policy we did is we had a kind of unlimited up to 1 year leave without pay situation where people could be not working for a year, but we would still be obligated to pay their benefits for a year. And so, again, that's just an expense we can't afford. And so the new policy limits that period. And it basically says we'll do it in consultation with the employee, but no more than 75 to 90 days at the outside. But it will do it on a case-by-case basis. Now, we haven't had anybody do this in recent history, but if our policy says that they can... we would be liable for that. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's a change just to kind of reduce our financial liability. The other change that I'm making, just kind of for fairness sake, is the snow policy for part-time employees. Right now, if we have a snow day, or we close the library for whatever reason, the full-time people who were scheduled to work get paid. But the part-time people who were scheduled to work don't get paid. And I just don't think that's fair. If people planned to be here and through no fault of their own, we'd close the library, they should still get paid. So I'm adding that policy to allow us to pay people who were scheduled if we have to close for snow.
Which we haven't had any snow, at least.
Thank goodness.
That's just been non-existent lately. Okay. Do y'all just review this? This is probably one of the most important things we'll do, for sure.
Oh, I should also say the compensation time off system for full-time staff. We've been doing this informally, but we don't account for it. This will allow us to account for it. So, for example, you know, people will work late, you mm-hmm. know, and they'll work extra hours, and then they'll take those hours on another day. And so we just kind of do it informally. This allows us to track that for somebody to say, okay, they worked 4 extra hours this week. We're going to put that in their, you know, comp time bank, and they can use that. We don't pay people for that ever, and there is a limit. In this policy, they have 2 months to use those comp hours. If they don't use them, they disappear.
Okay.
Those comp hours are always figured in hours or in 15-minute increments or 10-minute increments?
In hours, I think, is what we put.
So if I work 4.5 hours, I get credit for 5 hours?
I don't know. That's a good question. We changed, that's another change that I've made, is to allow everything to be done in 15-minute increments. So right now, if people take leave, they have to take a full hour. And sometimes people don't need a full hour, they need a half an hour, they need 15 minutes. So we've changed the policy to allow people to use leave in 15-minute increments. I don't see why we can't apply the same thing to
comp time. I'm just asking.
Yeah, and I don't know, I don't think we thought of it, but we can clarify that. That's a good idea.
The question I have about, like, for instance, we have two holidays coming up that fall on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So people who work Monday through Friday and the holiday falls on a Saturday, how does that work? Like,
we currently give them mm-hmm. those 8 hours of vacation.
Right.
That's another one of the changes we're making here.
Yeah, I saw that.
To end that
okay.
practice. I will say this is probably among the staff the least popular change mm-hmm. in this package.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that many people who are affected by
mm-hmm.
it. But if you're not somebody who is going to ever work on a Saturday
mm-hmm.
normally, it seems to me, again, that I'm taking on a financial liability
right.
to give you an additional 8 hours that you were never going to work
mm-hmm.
in normal circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where sometimes we fall back to whatever the county policy is, and that's tricky here because the county isn't open on Saturdays ever.
Right.
Whereas we are a Monday to Saturday.
Yes.
We have hours,
yeah,
so it doesn't really doesn't translate.
Right, and our holiday schedule kind of accommodates a lot of Saturday holidays. This
mm-hmm.
year's a perfect example,
mm-hmm.
right, where New Year's Day falls on the Saturday.
Right.
We're giving people New Year's Eve off.
Right.
So, Christmas falls on the Saturday, we're giving people Thursday and Friday off.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've taken care of those Saturday holidays
mm-hmm.
in our leave policy. But there are other, so Juneteenth is the other one that happens very often on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but people who wouldn't normally work that, we're just handing out another 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the Grinch or Simon Legree, but I do want to get that audit finding of liability lower.
Right, right.
Well, and if you have time, then you're always allowed to take time off if you need that holiday. Right, how most state or county places will give like the following Monday. Well, if somebody wants to take that following Monday, then they can. You can use your leave and take that as leave, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you all have any other questions on these major changes here?
As a majority, how did your staff feel about this?
I think the only one that was remotely controversial was the Saturday.
Okay.
And
the lunch one.
Sorry, Tracy, I should
okay.
say that. We are current. I can't believe I forgot that. We are currently giving people a paid 1 hour lunch for every 8 hour shift that they work. This has created scheduling issues and financial issues because I have to bring in part-time staff to cover lunches for people. So by law, we're not required to give a paid lunch hour. And again, our HR consultant said, why are you doing that? Why are you willingly giving everybody those dollars for not working and creating a scheduling problem for yourself? So under this policy, I'm cutting it from an hour to half an hour. Our HR consulting firm thought we should eliminate it altogether. It doesn't really solve my problem because then people are off the clock, but they're still then walking away, and I still have to cover those hours. So a half an hour lunch we can make work. So we're going to give people a paid half-hour lunch because, to use the example that Helen and I always use of Helen. So if Helen has to send somebody down downstairs to cover a lunch for someone who's working in the reference section, and the person upstairs can handle being by themselves for half an hour, it's a lot harder to do that for an hour. And so that's why half an hour. So, you know, people have to eat lunch. It will mean people who are used to running out at lunchtime.
I was about to say, that's going to force everybody to either eat here or, and you can't really run out and get.
Yes.
In half an hour. I agree.
Yeah. Now, I agree. The other option is to, you know, if I then say, okay, you can have an hour, but it's going to be unpaid, then I have the scheduling problem of I have to bring in people to cover the hours.
I've never had a paid lunch.
Me either. My entire professional life.
So that's, I mean, it's good. And once again, you're going to be flexible. If it's an emergency or, oh golly day, and you have two other 15-minute breaks, right? During the day or?
No, it's one or the other. You can have two 15-minute breaks or you can have a half hour lunch.
Paid.
Right.
So, okay.
Okay. Kristen, you're out there. Do you have any questions? Comments?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay.
Oh,
I have to check in with you every once in a while.
Well, Kristen's on the personnel committee.
She is. She's very aware of it, but we're just checking in to make sure.
She's heard this discussion before.
Right. So those were the two major sticking points with the staff.
And I would say, I mean, you guys feel free to say exactly what you think, guys.
I heard they ever eat lunch.
No.
So it's
no. Helen and Rose never eat. They don't. They're like robots.
I
eat at
something
my desk.
In my mouth at the computer because
I bring my lunch and I eat at my desk.
Well,
but it's not about me. It's about
Therein lies the other thing. I bring my lunch and I eat it at my desk. Are you working or not working?
You're working. That's a working lunch.
I mean, I
do that every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what lots of people do.
But it's good for people to walk away. You need to, Kristen can.
Well, now that we have the elevator.
Say that you need to walk away for those 30 minutes away from your area.
There's the mental health expert nodding
her head. For your own mental health.
Yes.
Kristen's head is at your head.
Ah, she's snacking.
I do have one suggestion.
Sure.
And that's on page 31. Examples of inappropriate conduct. It says being under the influence of alcohol.
Okay.
Have you thought about putting or illicit drugs on it?
Sundry. Yeah. So.
The third bullet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Example.
So the one above that says possessing, using, distributing, selling, or negotiating the sale of illegal drugs or controlled substances.
Okay.
Hmm.
Use. I got it. I think using.
Okay.
You got it. Well, I can tell a lot of work went into this.
Yes.
A whole lot of work.
I've read it so many times that I. There's certain language that.
If we're going through the language, I have a question.
Sure.
Okay, yeah,
is our intent to maintain a work environment which is free of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation because of age, 40 and over? You mean I can make fun of people who are 35?
All day long. No, I'm just kidding. I retract that.
No, you don't.
Where was that? What page is that, Tom?
It's in the equal opportunity thing. I don't think y'all for any reason ought to mention genetic information. I mean, that is so specific. Why
don't
you
didn't say.
And the more you put in here, the more you leave yourself open for the next thing.
Yeah, I think they were just, again, this is all language that came from the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can understand the race, color, you know, national origin. I don't really understand ancestry, but I can understand religion. And but all the rest of that's just veteran status, uniform service member status.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that
Those, I think, right, I believe here. Those are federal government requirements.
Page 8.
And human resources that they
actually have. Oh, there's some on page 8, too. Same thing.
They say that in the human, if they even start at 39, I can make fun of you, but 40, I can't.
You can't make fun of me for being old.
Yeah, there's some more, too.
Well, at 40, you're not
equal opportunity. Kristen wants to talk. Kristen wants to talk. Look at her.
She's like... You've got a good view.
No, that's a very good point, though.
But isn't it rules and regs?
I don't know where that comes from, but...
I will check. I believe the answer to that is because there is case law that says that age discrimination is...
Well,
they
say age, you can't discriminate for age, and then you say over 40. That's discriminating
for age. Well,
that's
for us, that Tom.
Isn't that the same thing?
I mean, you'll be 40 next year.
Yeah, I'll be 40 next year. No doubt. I was 40 last year.
Were you really? Yeah, well,
I've been 40
months.
For a while.
So, Rose, bringing this back into the, you know, when does this all become effective? January 1st? If we
January
vote?
2nd.
January 2nd, because you're off first. So we vote on this tonight to approve it.
Yes, and I will say...
Or do we need to do that?
Yes.
Yes, we do. That's
all
the main,
need to approve this
that's
to
the main
make
thing.
It effective
that's the main
January
thing.
2nd. Yes.
So,
as being on the committee and being in that, and we met with the HR lady,
mm-hmm.
who is very knowledgeable mm-hmm. and wise, and everything she has was backed up by facts and law.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how much it's changed.
Right.
So, and that was their. That was their whole thrust with this is to bring us up to date with the standards for public.
Well, agencies. Who says this is standard?
The laws.
What law? Federal. Show me the law that says this age 40 is standard.
Okay, I will ask her about that. As I
show
say,
me the law where it says genetic information. Is even relevant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there.
What does that mean, genetic information?
I don't know, Pat. I mean, somebody can come in and say, we need to have your DNA tested before I can make fun of you. I don't know what it
is. I can make fun of you without your DNA.
Yeah, I know. And you do.
So it's just expanding the. Yeah.
I don't want it expanded. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want it expanded. I don't want you going into my heritage to put it in a personal policy.
National origin, ancestry, okay. Genetic information, okay.
But that...
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
yeah, it's all...
they've captured a full range of experience, and so their recommendation is based on
if it's
the
a recommendation,
experience.
I would...
Okay.
My recommendation is we take it out.
Maybe we, okay, so if we reworded that, so it says, it is our intent to maintain a work environment which is free of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation, period.
Period. Period.
Okay. Right here it says that under the law, the protected class for the ages, people aged 40 and older, the federal law that governs age discrimination is the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, or ADEA.
It's always covered somewhere else. I mean, it's always reading.
It's on page five.
So, I mean, the lady was
under equal opportunity.
The lady was very knowledgeable, and, I mean, she pretty much gave us, here's why this.
Well, but if Tom's not comfortable with us having that whole string.
I can be outvoted. No,
but,
it's no problem.
But, I mean, if we could just simplify that to end at that one spot to say, it is our intent to maintain a work environment which is free of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation.
That covers it. That covers the whole thing.
We don't.
I'm still not finding it.
It's on five, page five,
2.2.
Right here.
2.2.
Okay.
We're at third sentence down.
Right there.
He's basically Tom saying, why do we have to go into because of? Can we just leave it at
because
retaliation?
Because of lawsuits that have happened.
Yeah.
That's why. It's the for the lawsuits.
Could you just say for any reason?
No. No.
You have to define it.
No, you have
patent.
To define.
This is your
know.
Field.
I don't know
We've gone to mental health. Now we're going to law.
I don't know anything about
So.
Personnel.
You can pass it without me.
Can we just, I mean, we can, could we pass it with the clause saying that we can follow up with our personnel management consultant and clarify that, the reasoning for it? Would that, you be okay with that? If we at least follow up on it?
I can clarify it. She already clarified it. They say that's what you ought to do.
Well.
I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
And it's there.
I mean, my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the ununiformed service member status?
That so means whether.
Go ahead, Rose. No, you're better.
No, it means, you know, if, for example, someone is serving in the Coast Guard and you don't like people who serve in the Coast Guard, right? You prefer people who served in the Army. So it can't be a basis
for discrimination.
When they don't have a uniform on?
Uh-huh. No, it just means.
Isn't that like civilian?
Uniform service member status means
mm-hmm.
what, you know, whether they're whatever, they're retired, they're.
Okay. Well, then the next thing that's going to happen here is the next one's going to come out and say, if you're wearing blue uniforms, you can't be, you know, if you're wearing camouflage uniforms, that's different. You know, and then over 40, you can make fun of people over 40, apparently.
So no, you cannot.
You cannot.
That's the point.
Nor can you hire or by this,
you can make fun of people at 39.
But then also that could be, you know, could you discriminate against somebody who's 18 just out of high school and wants a job? You know, it can go all ways.
Tattooed up.
But the age.
So that's going to be the next thing that goes on here. You can't discriminate because of tattoos.
So, patent, well. Legal, eagle.
I have no background in that at all.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
And I will say, Paul did look at this,
mm-hmm.
and he said kind of the same thing. He said, this is not my area, but I don't see anything objectionable.
Well, but it's so complicated, and the fact about it is that this does not fall on any of us. It goes back to the HR company that is helping us to develop it. Right.
Yes. Right.
You worked in HR for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes, I mean,
but yeah,
she is so knowledgeable. And we ask these same questions. We were mm-hmm. together for a little while. And Kristen, you throw your two cents in.
Well, so there's a catch-22 because we do have that, you know, the lady that met with us that day, you know, the information she was putting in there, of course, was the pertinent information we were going to have to be within the law. And I don't know that we have to understand it all. I mean, I think that it just pretty much says we can't discriminate against anybody.
Right. They just put it out in sections.
Unfortunately, it seems like the federal government has turned to, well, we have to identify every specific group that we could possibly identify.
Well, they've left a lot out in this thing.
You know, Tom, I can make fun of your elbows or something like that.
Right.
But not because you're starting to.
I can't see those, so I can't.
Well, Kristen, that's a good, that was a good explanation, Kristen.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So, moving on from that particular spot, do we see anything else that is a little bit?
I didn't. Okay. I don't know much about it.
Well, what did you see? We can't turn back. What did you see?
Anything?
I'm fine today.
All right.
I don't know nothing.
All right. So, after having reviewed, a lot of work went into it. It's been reviewed by the attorney. It's been reviewed by HR consulting firm. And, I mean, it's had a lot of work.
Personnel committee.
So, it's our business now to entertain a motion to approve the new personnel policy so it can be implemented on January 2nd. So we need to entertain a motion.
I make a motion to be approved with that as written without this one sentence in it.
Rose, can we maybe modify that to say, can we clarify from the personnel?
If you want to go back and they want to change it back and they say it can't be, can we def- can't be modified, if, that's fine. I'll go, just, if they say it can't be modified, that's fine.
But if I'm, they say we absolutely have to.
Why would I vote for something I don't believe in if I can change it?
Okay.
All right.
So with that understanding, just to clarify with them that they're, we have to have that in there.
Have to.
Right. Legally have to.
Legally have to have the language just as it's written.
Okay. So you make that motion.
Yeah.
Do I have anyone who will second the motion as Tom made it on the floor?
I do have one more question.
Okay.
On the social media policy.
Yes. What page are you on?
32.
Okay.
6.6B.
Uh-huh. So, and this came up. This came up in the staff also raised this, and so the point of this is to help employees make a distinction when they're using social media in their personal time. Their own personal social media. We don't want them to share, you know, confidential library information. We don't want them to be speaking for the library in their personal social media.
Or anything derogatory.
Exactly. Or yes, you know, saying unpleasant things about library patrons, right? Like, I had the most ridiculous patron today who did this, right, this, or that, right? They can't do that. That's what this does, is it kind of, it tries to give employees guidelines about how to think about their personal social media and its relationship to their work.
Because, you know, we had a huge problem with this several years back.
Yes.
And we talked about a lot of this.
And it was a staff member, but it was also a board member.
Right. And she was very good on explaining this too.
Mm-hmm.
What is her name? Karen.
The lady from HR.
Karen Young. Yeah. Yes. Karen.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, but that's what this is about. This is exactly about that. To say, you know, first it says maintain the confidentiality of confidential information, i.e., financial records, reports.
Okay.
Customer lists. Right. So yeah, we were quite specific.
Okay.
I just want to make sure. Never represent yourself as a spokesperson for the Smith County Public Library in your personal social media. Now, we have separately social media policy for the library of how we use social media as a library, and there are designated people who do that, and they get guidance, and they have guidelines for doing that.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I do think if there's derogatory or comments made by staff, that should be immediate. Yep. There should be something in the trustee policy if they did it.
Right. Okay, so is there anything else? If not, do I have a second to Tom Patton? Will second Tom's motion. And now we'll take a vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Kristen?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous.
All right.
So this will be implemented January 2nd. Thank you all.
No, wait a second.
So much. Yes.
Well, I will talk to
after her. After she figures out that detail that you put in your motion.
Well, my motion says we'll do it.
Right.
Without the thing. Unless
we have to have it.
Yes.
Okay, but who's to decide that we have to have it?
It's going to the professional HR consulting firm.
I will call them and talk to them about it in the morning, and we will leave it out unless. And I'll come back and tell you what they say.
And if they get to say we have to have it, if they could direct us to the legal requirement that says we have to have it.
Now,
the
that
law
would be helpful. Yeah. So we have the basis for right. what they're saying. That would be helpful.
And so, could we do that by email? Like,
if you could send
could
it.
Shoot an email and we sure. could all say yay or nay at that point.
Well, we've already voted that what the guidance is on that. So if we can leave it out, we're going to leave it out.
Okay.
When the lady from HR who directed that, did she say that was law? She did?
Yes. She.
The verbiage is law.
Well, that the protected categories come from, you know, case law and written law. So.
Mm-hmm. So we just need her direction to say this is where that comes from, so we can all know what the basis is for that.
All go for that, but that's all right. We'll go with it.
Well.
That's ridiculous, but.
Okay, we still have a couple more things to do here. Adjustments to the hours for the library.
Yes. So when we reopened in August, we said we would go through the end of the calendar year to see what kind of usage we had with our hours. What we have discovered, particularly in Marion, is, you know, we are open 3 nights a week till 8 p.m. Two of those nights, we do not see people until 8 p.m. So Tuesday nights and Thursday nights, we just, you know, we have people sitting here, again, burning money, and we don't have patrons in here using the library. So I would like to, starting in January, cut back in Marion, particularly to 10 to 6, except for Monday. Monday, we have to be open one night a week until 8 p.m. And Monday will be that night because that's, you know, just looking at the numbers of when we have the most patrons, it's Monday. So we will stay open Monday till 8, but I'm going to cut back to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that way, Wednesday we were already 6, Friday we were already 6. So for patrons, it's a little cleaner. And we're going to keep, we thought about cutting Saturday hours because Saturday afternoon can also sometimes be a little slow. But we decided to leave it, so we'll leave it for now. Chilhowie does not want to change her numbers are pretty much back to pre-pandemic levels in terms of visitors and circulation, so she doesn't want to cut any hours. Chris, his may cut some Saturday hours. She's not seeing people much after 2. But we haven't quite decided that. And again, this is not something y'all need to vote on.
No.
I just want to explain it to you and tell you why I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on usage and, you know, not spending money if we don't have patrons using those hours.
Right.
We may revisit it in the summer if we, you know, we've kind of talked about winter hours, summer hours, if there's more interest in later hours when it's light.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in Saltville, you know, Chris says there's an absolute correlation to people coming at, you know, they're only open till 6, but she says once it gets dark, people in Saltville don't come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true in Chilhowie because there are a lot of events going on at the gym, and so people go to the gym because there are events going on there. But in Saltville, once it gets dark, they don't go out evidently. So
okay.
She sees a definite seasonal correlation.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. We have our next meeting now to plan. It will be in Chilhowie.
Yes.
And it will be the third Thursday of January, which is January 20th at 5:30. Now, we have a policy, because this is we're entering the time for snow. What generally, I think we've had, if it snows in schools or either pulled out.
But we're already opening
mm-hmm.
at 10, so.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the third Thursday?
That's the third Thursday. So if it happens to have, we have a big snowstorm Thursday morning.
The 20th?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll let you buy us dinner afterwards.
Right.
Will you let me?
I will.
So we'll just need to take that and play it by ear if there happens to be a significant snowfall, and we may have to adjust that. Okay?
Did you say there was something about if the schools were closed?
Well, we had typically, if the schools close early, we take that as a sign that we probably need to not have a meeting that evening. So that's generally kind of the way that runs.
Yeah.
So we'll just take it and play it by ear.
This is Rose's option to close her.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is a board. This is a board
meeting.
Meeting
in January.
Board meeting.
Oh, I thought
this isn't the library.
No.
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is a board meeting.
Will it be at the
Chilhowie?
In the library.
Yeah, yes. In the little conference room.
Okay.
And let me interject that we did get our 2 library signs on Highway 11.
Yeah, we saw that. That looks great.
So it looks good.
Yeah. They look great. Yeah.
A lot of good things going on.
I drove through there right after they went up. I was like, oh, look!
Yeah.
People know where we are.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a nice thing to have. So we'll entertain a motion to adjourn at this point.
I'll make a motion.
I second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, well, we can thank you, Kristen.